Dublin's Talking Sport.
Welcome to Dublin's Talking Sports podcast with me, Ken Doherty, and my good friend, Reggie Corrigan. Thanks for tuning in to catch up on the latest GAA, football, rugby, and all the crack. Enjoy the show, and don't forget, rate and review wherever you get your podcasts.
Another great show for you this week on Dublin's Talking Sport. I catch up with Ken, and also we'll be talking to Stephen O'Brien of the UK Packers on his recent trip to Lambeau Field and all that's going on in the NFL at the moment. Will Slattery of the Irish Independent gives me an in-detail analysis of Ireland's performance in the autumn internationals, and we also look at the big game today between England and South Africa. Declan Drake gives us his usual GA roundup, and in football, Alan Cawley gives us a roundup of the World Cup so far. So download the show now wherever you get your podcasts.
Very good morning to you, Reg. How are you?
I'm a little bit tired after the toy show last night, but I'm in great form, I have to say. The Wizard of Oz, I tell you, it was great. It was really good.
Dorothy
and the Red Slippers. There was all sorts going on. We were up late last night watching that, I think, like everybody in the country. Another great production, you have to say. It really was. It was really well done. I doubt you were watching it now somewhere.
No, I didn't see it. I didn't see it at all because you can't get it over here. Yeah. But I always loved the toy show, I must say. I always really enjoyed it, you know, as a kid and that, watching it, you know, with the family and seeing what, you know, new toys were coming out for Christmas, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there was plenty of stuff going on, and Ryan was, as always, does the best job he does, I think, on that show is the toy show. He was amazing at it. He was the straw man in The Wizard of Oz, so that was pretty, the scarecrow, he was pretty, that was pretty apt for him. But how's your week been?
It's been good. I've been enjoying the World Cup, I must say. Absolutely fantastic. There's been some fun, you know, brilliant matches. The atmosphere has been really good at it, and enjoying the punditry as well. Roy Keane is the star as usual.
He is,
Us having a little go at each other, but that was, now the World Cup has been really, really good. You know, it was surprising, you know, the Argentina match against Saudi Arabia. That was absolutely fantastic. Brilliant the way it finished.
Yeah.
And some then Japan shocks. Beating Germany as well, following it up.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about it. There's been some amazing, incredible shocks. I mean, I suppose even yesterday, England only getting the draw against the USA. And I know some would probably say that, well, they were, you know, they knew they were going to get through or whatever. But that's not a good result. Not a good look for them, if you know.
No,
what I mean.
I thought they were poor, to be honest. You know, I thought they looked good against Iran, obviously. Iran were very poor, very out. But I thought last night it was sort of it was a reality check for them. I sort of giving them a chance, an outside chance this year, you know, because of the way they played in the European Championship. Well, I just thought last night they were, you know, very ran out of ideas and you know, didn't really penetrate the United States defence at all. You know, I thought the United States played pretty good. You know, they played defensively as a unit very good, but I just thought England were very poor.
And Wales have been bad. Like, I mean, you're looking at that and you're looking at some of the other teams in it and you're kind of going, how are we not, like, there? Yeah. How are we not good enough to be? We're at that level anyway. We're definitely at the level of some of them. Wales were so poor, you know, and going out 2-0 to Iran and out of the tournament now.
Yeah, yeah. I thought Bale and Ramsey were very leggy. They looked at their careers are sort of more or less at the end now, you know. But they've been great, you know, great service for Wales. It's great to see Wales in the World Cup, you know, after 64 years. But, I just thought when the keeper got sent off, you know, they were down to 10 men, they were just run ragged then, you know. And, you know, I thought Iran played really well. They do have two lads that actually play in Champions League, in the Champions League this year, you know, and I'm playing really well. I thought some of the players played really well yesterday and they were worthy. I think that match against the United States, the last match of the group, will be something to behold, like, you know. The winners of that match will go through to the last 16. Well, United States have to win. Ramwell could do with a draw, like, you know. So, it's going to be an interesting sort of finale. And then, of course, England play Wales in the final match as well. Wales are still here with an outside chance, but I don't know. Yesterday, they've got no chance of it.
No chance, no. And tell me, what did you make of, you know, Germany and all that? Who do you think kind of stood out for you so far?
Brazil play.
I saw Brazil, but I mean, they were poor in the first half, but they came good in the second.
But I just thought in the end, I mean, even that bench, Reggie, I mean, it's players that they can bring on, like, you know?
Yeah, there's no doubt.
And believe it or not, they had three Man United players on the field.
That
must be a force.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be saying that's what got them there, that's for sure.
No.
Well, what do you make of that news? I mean, that's crazy stuff as well, up for sale and all that's going on.
That's what I was telling you last week. Yeah. I think that Ronaldo interview was probably the best thing that's ever happened to United. You know, and he sort of brought home a lot to roost what exactly is going on behind the scenes. And straight away, they probably had enough now, and that's the final straw, and they put the club up for sale, which is a good thing. You know, most United fans will be over the mill that it's up for sale. And I've been for one of them, because those guys have been, they've been buying players, but they've been taking a lot of money out of the club as well over the years. And I think with new investment, both in the infrastructure, in the ground, and everything behind the scenes, as well as on the field, that Man United will be a better place.
How would you feel, though, if it did go to one of the petrol states and it's like, it's, you know, oil money running the place? And
I wouldn't like that. Apple are interested. You know, a big sort of blue-chip company would be nice, you know.
Are they really interested, though? I mean, the amount of money it costs to buy it, it really feels like this would be primed for some sort of oil money.
Yeah, no, I think, for the amount of money that it's turning over, it's the biggest club in the world as regards to touring. It has to be. You know, there's not many bigger. Real Madrid, Barcelona, United. But commercially, with fans around the world, I think it's a no-brainer for anybody. But, I think the Ronaldo interview indirectly is probably one of the best things that's happened to United over the last few years, you know?
Yeah,
it's a sad end for him, sort of, the way he has to go out at the end of his career and his legacy. But, United fans will still look fondly on him, what he did for United. And even when he came back, I mean, he still scored 20-odd goals, but he's been a legend, United legend. I wouldn't feel any way bad towards him, you know?
Yeah, no, and you know, there is a side of me that's kind of gone, I don't agree with the interview, that's for sure, but there is a side of me that's kind of gone, I feel sorry for him that he can't seem to come to terms with the fact that it's all finishing up. And probably for him, doing that interview was the only way out. He knew once he did that, he was going to sever ties with the club, and that was the way out, you know. And he gets his point across.
Something, Reggie. I think he has a club lined up already. I think he knew he was going to go in January, whatever happens.
Yeah.
And that was his way of sort of getting back, and it was perfect time. And he was out of the club. He was away with his team, his national team for World Cup duty. He wasn't going to be going back in anyway, and it was a good time for everything, you know.
Yeah, very good. Plenty going on in the snooker as well. Mark Allen, defeat in the German Masters.
I think it's just he lost in the German Masters, but what a fine to come back from 6-1 against England last week.
Unreal.
And he's followed that up with a final in the British Open. I mean, he started with a final in the British Open, then he won the Northern Ireland Open, and now he's won the UK Championship. But the comeback from 6-1 against Dean and beat him 10-7, was it in the end? 10-7. Incredible win. And I tell you what, he's going to be one of the players to watch now for the rest of the season and the day for the World Championship.
Absolutely. Actually,
get your money on, Reg.
Yeah, I like Mark Allen. And funny enough, it was only during the week. I don't know why I was clicking through a few bits and back history and stuff looking at that. But that clip of him and Ronnie, I remember Ronnie having a go at him for making faces in the corner.
He was moving in his chair.
Yeah, and I loved the way Mark Allen was like, give me a break, will you? You know, like he stood his ground, he didn't back down, and he wasn't taking any of Ronnie's messing, you know. So I like his attitude. He's got a real edge to him, you know.
Oh, yeah, he's got an edge to him, all right. You know, there's no doubt about that. Yeah. And very confident young man, you know. And he's going to be, I think he, the way he's going, he could finish up world number one at the end of the year if he keeps going the way he's going, you know.
Jimmy Hoyt, he's back in Germany as well, is he? He secured a spot in that?
Yeah, he qualified, and he had that great run to the UK. At 60 years of age to get to the UK last 32. He's qualified for Germany. And he's on a bit of a roll. Life in the old dog, right?
Absolutely. Now it's time to turn our attention to rugby. Delighted to welcome back after a short break the one and only Will Slattery. Good morning, Will. How are you?
Good, thanks, Reggie. How are you?
I'm great, thank you. Great indeed. What a wonderful autumn window we've had from an Irish perspective. And still two great games to come today as well, which we'll get to as well. But looking back on it, I think we learned an awful lot about this Irish squad ahead of next year's World Cup, and even down to the point that Johnny Sexton with that late withdrawal, and we still managed to work our way through to a victory. What were your thoughts on it all?
Yeah, as you said, kind of three very interesting games, a lot to take from it. Like, kind of two statistics sort of jump out to me in terms of both positives and negatives, and that's across the South Africa and the Australia game. We only conceded three tries across the two matches. So you're playing two of the top Southern Hemisphere sides. The Irish defence was really stingy. That was a real bonus. Because even in the summer when Ireland beat New Zealand and won that series, they still conceded, you know, a fair few tries across those three games. On the flip side, Ireland only scored three tries across those two games too, which is indicative of how the attack did kind of struggle across the window. There was flashes, there was moments, that great try against South Africa probably being the most obvious one. But the attack that flowed so well again in New Zealand was kind of stifled for various reasons. It was personnel issues. The South African defence was obviously very, very aggressive and fast up, and were, you know, cutting off some of those passing channels. So I think it was great to get the win. There was areas that were very positive. The four pack as well, you know, against South Africa were really, really impressive. You know, they fronted up against Australia as well. Caelan Doris, Tyke Byrne, James Ryan, all these guys had great series. The attack didn't quite flow, which I think is actually a good thing. It means going into the Six Nations, people won't be overconfident. They know there'll be lots of work on. So overall, I think a very kind of informative window for Andy Farrell.
What did you think maybe caused that not to flow? I mean, was it the number nine position, for example? There was the trying out of Murray at the beginning of it, and then going back to Jameson Gibson Park, there were some knocks and injuries along the way. That has an effect on things. And then, of course, Johnny at 10 controls things, but then he picks up a knock. Does that mean that the rest of the team are kind of looking around, wondering which way it's going to go? I mean, how dependent are we on those two at 9 and 10, Gibson Park and Sexton? But the replacements and the people that we saw coming in, did they stand up and offer enough?
Yeah, like, there's a lot of reasons why it probably didn't flow as well as we hoped or expected. Obviously, Johnny Sexton's absence against Australia, Jack Crowley came in, and for a guy so young in the international game, I thought did quite well. But he isn't Johnny Sexton, who has over 100 caps and all these accolades and really makes the team tick. So that would certainly, you know, add to it. But I just thought overall, the passing in particular just wasn't quite as crisp as we've come to expect. Interestingly, in that South Africa game, when the South African defence really was, you know, in our face, very aggressive, there were moments that we could have unlocked them with better passing. People weren't being hit in stride. They were having to take a little bit of extra time to kind of catch it behind their body. That kind of passing, I just thought, was off across the board pretty much, you know, for the whole thing. As you mentioned there, you know, Jameson Gibson Park didn't start the first game, you know. Johnny Sexton obviously missed the last game, but there was even moments of sloppiness throughout. Like, you know, when the attack did get motoring against Australia, there was a couple of times, you know, Mac Hanson went into the touch. One time, Jameson Gibson Park had the ruck on the left wing. He kind of just stepped in touch as he passed the ball. There was kind of a combination of kind of errors or areas where they didn't quite fire. You know, why that was, I'm not entirely sure. But yeah, the passing is what stood out to me. It wasn't quite as crisp right in front of them, so they could just tip it on, or, you know, out the back. I think that kind of delayed and kind of made things a little bit disjointed, in particular in that South African game.
I think that the one thing that stood out to me from the November series was that this is an Irish team. Now, okay, we'll state the obvious. Johnny Sexton at 10, we get that, okay? But and Jameson Gibson Power probably at 9 as well. But apart from that, you know, you've got your Tyke Furlong at tight head, and Porter probably definitely the starting loose head, but you're struggling to pick out the definites. Van der Fleer, World Player of the Year, he'll get in there, but Peter O'Mahony has found a resurgence in his career. You know, in the second row, there's huge competition for places. Jack Conan, who was the standout player, finds himself a little bit out in the cold. And equally so at centre, there's new combinations being made. You've got Bundy coming back. It's a very, very difficult place to be in many ways for an Irish player, because most of them are unsure of their place.
It's funny. I think the opposite. I actually think it's a very settled team. And I think November, the performance of the fringe players, both in the A game and against Fiji, I think it will make that even more settled. Like, I think Hugo Keenan is nailed on. I think James Lowe, his absence was keenly felt. I think he's nailed on. I think Andy Farrell will go to Henshaw and Ringrose when they're, if they're both fit. I think Doris is nailed on. I think Tadhg Byrne and Ryan had such a good partnership over that window. You know, Dan Sheehan has emerged, you know, with Ronan Kelleher's injuries. He's playing for Leinster today, which is good to see. Andrew Porter is nailed on. I actually think he's actually leaned more into the guys that he has selected over the last, you know, 18 months or so than I thought he might in November. And I think he kind of in his head might think there's a good gap now between the haves and the have-nots in the Ireland squad. And there's not really many games to change his mind. I don't know how often, how much he'll look to club form. Like the Six Nations, they're already setting their stall out. There's been comments about finally winning a quote-unquote real trophy, you know, so I don't think there'll be experimentation there. I actually think Andy Farrell has kind of his core 10, 11 guys, and there's still a bit of room in maybe the back three. As you said, Ian Henderson and Ronan Kelleher coming back into contention at a few positions might make a change or two, but I think by and large he actually knows his strongest team, which... Yeah. It's good if they're playing well, but then if there's kind of dips in form and you're having to bring in new guys, maybe you'd be a bit worried.
It's interesting the way you put it. I 100% understand what you mean, but I suppose where I was coming from was, you know, maybe 12 months ago, a lot of people had written off the likes of Peter O'Mahony, for example, and now Peter O'Mahony is back again as being one of the first names on that list because his form has returned. I suppose that's what I was leaning towards, is that, and Jack Conan, who was nailed on, is now missing out. There seems to be now... you know, the pressure is on those players to keep performing because there's such a good strength and depth and there's so much competition behind them coming through that you've just got to, every single game, it's just get out there and put in your absolute brilliant best performance, or otherwise there's someone waiting to take over from you.
Yeah, and as I said, you know, there's not many opportunities in an Ireland context to impress, but it's a monster club season in terms of what's at stake for these Irish provinces. Leinster in particular, trying to finally win back a European Cup. So there will be loads of guys who come back into contention at club level. Will Connors, Ryan Baird, to name some guys who haven't really featured for Ireland. You know, Jacob Stockdale at Ulster, he didn't get a look in the window besides that A game. Like, if he comes back and Ulster have a good year and he goes really well, you know, does he come back into the mix? So while I suppose in an Ireland context, Andy Farrell will be going to win this Six Nations, there's still a huge number of key games over the next, I think it's, they play 10 matches between now and the Six Nations, 4 in Europe, there's like 2 or 3 inter-pros as well. So there's plenty of kind of shop window opportunities for guys who haven't been in the reckoning. And I agree with you, like a lot can change in 12 months. Like 12 months ago, Peter O'Mahony looked like he was kind of on his way out. He's been really good. Conversely, Jack Conan looked nailed on in that back row, along with Doris and Van der Fleer. That's been completely changed now with O'Mahony's resurgence. So, yeah, I agree. Well, I think at the moment, the settled team, I'm not saying, you know, there's not room for drops in form, raises in form. And that's why this next 10 weeks in particular, I'm actually really interested to see how the provinces go.
And it's brilliant for us as a nation going into a World Cup in our strongest ever position, regardless of what people say. And I know there was all the talk about 2015 and 2007 and the squads that we had, and blah, blah, blah. This is, without doubt, the strongest squad, in my opinion, that we've ever had going into it. So it's a great position to be in. Now, you mentioned the provinces there, and there's a huge one going on, of course, with Munster taking on Connacht. Munster under all sorts of pressure, and I suppose that's reflected in the players that they've brought back, the international players that they've brought back. They are determined to get a convincing victory over Connacht.
Yeah, and I think they will get one. I know Connacht have picked, you know, as strong a team as they can go with too. Bundiaki is back in the mix there, but I do think that Munster win over South Africa A, you know, in Porky Cueve could be maybe a galvanising game. This is the one to really kick on. They pick, as you say, pick their strongest team pretty much. Their bench has impact options as well. Edwin Odogbo, who's probably been the fine of the season. Gavin Coombs, Jack Crowley, all these guys on the bench to come on, freshen things up in the second half. I'm really interested to see how Joey Carberry goes with Jack Crowley waiting in the wings. Jack Crowley obviously got that game time over in November in Carberry's absence. That's going to be a fascinating subplot, because how Graeme Rowntree manages this will go a long way to determining, I think, how much Munster can get back into this season. He has three out halves there. Ben Healy played well against South Africa. He is probably the third, to be fair, now. But does he go with Carberry? Does he put Carberry to 15 and go with Crowley at 10? It'll be fascinating. But I do think Munster are primed for a good win today.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. We'll see how that one unfolds. I have to mention an amazing achievement. I think it's incredible. Josh van der Fleer's title of World Player of the Year and two nominations from Ireland in it. And I really do want to emphasise to people how difficult it is for a small nation like ourselves to have two players nominated, first of all, but to actually get a winner of it like that. And it's well deserved. I don't think there's anyone would question his crown on that one.
Yeah, only the third Irish player to win it, like Keith Wood and Johnny Sexton. Like Brian O'Driscoll, our greatest ever player, I think no one would argue with that. He never even got the nod, unfortunately. He probably should have once or twice. Van der Fleer's story over the last 3 years since the World Cup, I think, has been absolutely fascinating. And I actually struggle to think of another player who, kind of in the middle of his career, because he wasn't a young player, he was 26, 27 at the last World Cup, who's kind of reinvented himself, who's kind of added so many more strings to their bow.
And in that position as well, which is always so difficult to do, you know, as you said, he's a little bit older and you know, it tends to be younger in that position as well.
Yeah, and like, I would have had him down as a kind of a tireless work rate open side who would tackle all day, who would get the occasional poach, but didn't really offer that much around the pitch. And I actually would have said at the last World Cup that Ireland are not going to have great success with Josh van der Fleer at open side flanker. How wrong I was. He's added this explosiveness and the carry to his game now that he's honestly one of the best ball carriers in the Ireland side, which you would not have said 2-3 years ago. I know he's talked about kind of working on his footwork and how much like that can give him an edge when it comes into the contact area, but it just seems to have been a total mindset change as well. He's like an unrecognizable player. He wouldn't have been one of the standout guys. Now he just seems to be leading from the front. It's been a remarkable rise. He's a key guy, as you said, well deserved. He was European Player of the Year for his club form. He's World Player of the Year for his international form. That says it all, really. He's had an absolutely astonishing year, and he's going to be a key guy going into that World Cup. If he can maintain this level of play across the next 12 months, it will be a huge boost for Ireland to try to finally make a big mark at the World Cup. So it's a massive credit to him. I can't say I ever would have expected this from him, but just goes to show how much he has improved and the work he's put in.
Yeah, absolutely. Congratulations to him. Okay, we still have two wonderful games to look forward to in the autumn window. So it's Wales, Australia, two sides that I can't work out, to be perfectly honest with you. Wales, I'm expecting them to fall apart most weeks. They can pull out a performance. They can fall apart. You don't know where they are. Australia, similarly, just when you think they're dead and buried, they get a performance against France that you could argue they were very unlucky about. And they didn't really perform against us, it has to be said. I thought they were poor against Ireland, but they still ran us very close. So this match today, Wales-Australia, I have no idea which way to think this one's going to go.
Yeah, they're both coming in a very low place, but I think that different windows at the same time. As you mentioned there with Australia, like they beat Scotland by a point, lost very narrowly to France, Ireland and Italy, albeit Italy, that, you know, was a massive upset. So they have a load of injuries today as well. So they've lost Will Skelton back to club duty. So they are going in a little under man. But Wales, God, I watched the vast majority of that Georgia game last weekend.
So
they were absolutely dire. I was actually taken aback by how poor they were, especially considering they built a 12-0 lead. You're thinking they're home and hose. But like, they just look so ordinary. You look at that team sheet now, and it just kind of, with each passing year, it just goes to show how much Gatland and Sean Edwards wrung out of that group. Like, they're still going back to like Lee Halfpenny today, Alex Cuthbert, you know, Dan Lydiate's featured in this window. These are guys that were superstars 10 years ago, like kind of two generations of players ago. The fact that they haven't been able to replace them, and they're not even hitting great guns now, shows just the kind of the dearth of kind of talent coming through. Like even today, they're throwing in a very young centre, and his name has escaped me, in for like his first cap. You know, that, like, you know, Reece Priestley, I think, is still starting at out half, like, you know, or on the bench. You know, he started against Georgia. Like, they're going back to these old guys who just aren't delivering for them, and it just shows how, I think, Wayne Pivak, if they lose today, you know, they might well look for a change. But God, from what I saw last weekend, I can't see them winning today, albeit given Australia's form as well and who they're missing, you know, it's going to be a slugfest. I think both coaches could potentially be facing the exit door if they lose today.
No, there's no doubt about it. I think Hawkins is the young guy you're trying to think of there. Yeah, and the England-South Africa game, again, two teams. England, I don't know how they did it last week. I talk about a blow-up from New Zealand. I don't think I've ever seen New Zealand blow up the way they did last week. And South Africa will be coming in to try and prove a point as well, because it's been a sort of a mixed performances across the road from them in all the games they've been involved in. But it all leads up to an absolute humdinger today.
Oh, yeah, I can't wait for this game. You know, the England one is interesting. I saw a lot of coverage in the English media after the game saying how the last 10 minutes is the blueprint for the New England way. I think that's utter rubbish.
Like, rubbish.
That was a helter-skelter, frantic, unreplicable, almost, last 10 minutes. What I watched for the first 70 minutes was what I've come to expect from England under Eddie Jones the last 2 years. Jumbled team selection, raft of mistakes. They gave away so many dumb penalties. I just don't think... And again, he's changed... team, you know, changed players today. Like, he went with a weird back row last week. He's like, and he's just spinning a lot. Like, that last 10 minutes, you know, trying caution to the wind when the game was done and dusted, like, that doesn't tell me anything really about England, in my opinion. Like, Marcus Smith and Owen Farrell still don't look comfortable as a partnership. I think Marcus Smith would be much better off coming off the bench, like, as he did in the last 10 minutes when things are looser, and allow Farrell to manage the game, you know, throughout. So for me, England are still very much at a crossroads. I think it's a very important game for them today. But then you mentioned there, South Africa, their window. The Razzie Erasmus stuff is really becoming a distraction. You have kind of senior stalwarts like Brian Abana and John Smith coming out even now saying, this is wrong, this has to end. It must be a massive distraction. And you know what really troubled me was a moment in the Italy game last weekend when their hooker, Bongi and Banambi, made a comment to Matthew Cahy, the referee, about, oh, you have to referee both sides.
Yeah,
it's starting to seep into the players. I think I might have mentioned this last time I was on, that if South Africa players are believing this rubbish, that is not a good way to prepare for a test match, if you actually believe these kind of tinfoil hat conspiracies.
Oh yeah, it's total chip on the shoulder stuff and everything that they do now. You can see it's rubbing off on them, and it's like us versus the world. That's the way it is. That's what's trying to be instilled into the players, and I think that's what's happening.
Yeah, and I don't think that's a bad thing to a point. Obviously, if you have a cause, if you have kind of everyone's against us, it can work. But if it's actually feeding into how you play in your discipline, if you actually think, oh, well, we're actually not being ill-disciplined, we're just being picked on by referees.
Yeah, yeah. What I mean by that is it's an excuse. You've got the excuse. You're like, the last thing that you want in sport is to be have players who are looking for excuses for their performances, which is not themselves, you know, and they're looking for outside influences to blame, and that's what's crept in.
And I saw an interesting quote from Jack Nienaber in their press conference. It was highlighted in a Telegraph piece that even he was kind of, you know, when asked about the Razzie Erasmus stuff, he was speaking in code, how all people don't have all the facts. If they knew all the facts, they this, they that. Like, I didn't even, he was speaking very cryptically, and I didn't even like how he was handling it. Like, they've become, so when they won the last World Cup, great story, you know, Sia Khaleesi, the first black captain, Razzie Erasmus. They've lost all that goodwill, in my opinion, in world rugby. I'd say they're probably the most hated team in a long time in
it's
world
amazing.
Rugby.
It's amazing, you're right, yeah. And, I mean, I've seen a lot of comments during the week on WhatsApp groups and on Twitter and everywhere else, and it's exactly that. Now, you wouldn't say Twitter is ever anything but hate, but genuinely, it is. It's like people are kind of sick and tired of listening to South Africa whinging.
Yeah, and when people are going into an England game with Eddie Jones against South Africa, and we're hoping England and Eddie Jones can get one over them, it shows how much South Africa have fallen in the court of public opinion.
And it's World Cup time now as well, and we've got the one and only Alan Cawley on the line with us now. Good morning, Al. How are you?
I'm good, Reggie. How are you?
I'm great. Loving your coverage, loving the shows. You're doing a great job. And it's been interesting, is the way I'll describe the last week. Some results have been quite incredible, and never saw them coming. What have you made of it?
Yeah, I think it's been brilliant, Reggie, to be honest with you. And like you, I'm absolutely loving it too. A couple of slow games to start off, but I think I was lucky enough to be on the Argentina-Saudi Arabia game, and I think that result and that performance from Saudi Arabia kick-started the tournament, and it was absolutely brilliant. They were just exceptional, Saudi Arabia. The performance to put in, the effort, the endeavour, bodies on the line, just chasing every ball. They were absolutely fantastic, and I think after that result, as I say, that kick-started everything, because the following day, we had Japan beating Germany, another massive surprise, and a brilliant performance from Japan as well. Then we had Spain running out easy winners against Costa Rica, but being so impressive, and the young lads in midfield, Pedri and Gavi, just It was almost like the second coming of Xavi and Iniesta. And, of course, then France were in between that. And then Brazil lit up the tournament as well against Serbia in the second half. So yeah. I think they were absolutely brilliant as well, Brazil, in that second half. So I think it's been great, Reggie. I'm absolutely loving it, and I can't wait for more of it.
Yeah, absolutely. What did you make? I mean, it was plenty talked about the Argentina disallowed goal. I mean, was there much in it, do you think?
No, to be fair to them, I think the referee, even though it's so frustrating, there was one of them that was very, very minimal, and it was that kind of drawing the line through the player's shoulder, and that's the one that really frustrates people. But the other two were clear cut, and it just goes to show the small margins in football, Reggie, because it could have been 2 or 3 up Argentina, and they obviously only went in 1-0 up. But Saudi Arabia, and I'm not sure if you've seen that clip of the manager, you probably heard it doing the rounds of the team talk at half time, and it was just so inspirational, the manager and what they were doing at half time, and then obviously came out with that performance, and they were the performance of the tournament for me so far. Saudi Arabia, they were absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, it's we're still in a bit of a loss, I think, to work out what's going to go where or how it's going to end up. I mean, England's performance last night was very poor, considered by most. And in fact, I genuinely thought USA had enough chances to go and win that game. So you'd have to quit. Maybe they were just cruising because they knew England knew a draw was going to be enough for them to get through or whatever. But it kind of made me wonder, are they really contenders at all for it?
Yeah, and I don't think you can cruise in any game, especially in a World Cup, Reggie. So you think of the performance they got off to against Iran, and they were brilliant. And then people were suggesting, oh, well, it was only Iran. But then Iran came out and played great against Wales yesterday. They were very, very good. So that performance against Iran was very good from England. And you're thinking they're going to kick on against the USA last night. But as you said, the USA were the better team, and there were so many chances, should have won. And England, very, very poor. And you're probably going to get a little bit of that in tournament football as well. It's very much up and down. But from Southgate's point of view, I'm sure he'd be a little bit worried with what he watched last night. And again, it's kind of chopping and changing with personnel. He started with the back four, and will he tweak it now and go back to a three? So a lot of questions for him maybe to answer after that performance. But as you said, he'll get through the group. But if you look at the other side of the group, in Group B, in the next round, I think they're going to face the winners of, well, it's either going to be Netherlands or Ecuador, the way it's panning out. And you don't want to face Ecuador. I watched them against the Netherlands, Reggie, yesterday. And again, they were very, very lucky. Netherlands, Ecuador were absolutely brilliant. Another kind of surprise team, you'd say. And they've been the story so far. Saudi Arabia, Japan, Ecuador, they're so dangerous, these teams. There is a surprise element to them, but it's just the energy that they play with as well. So even though all the top teams and the favourites, you think they're going to get to the latter stages, I think we're going to see a couple of them go out, the big teams, and you'd be worried certainly about Argentina, Germany in a position to find themselves at the moment.
Yeah, it's not a great place to be. I think Argentina will probably battle through, and I think they'll find there were some moments of brilliance in that game as well, you know, and you maybe things just sometimes just don't go your way on the day, and I think they'll be better than Mexico and Poland. I think they'll get through that group. I wouldn't be as worried about them. I suppose the other team we would talk about because of the personnel and, of course, that brand being Ronaldo, is Portugal. And, you know, they looked a little bit dodgy there for a while against Ghana. But they came back. But I thought it was interesting to notice the likes of Leo and João Félix, the younger players in that Portuguese squad, really starting to take control of that team.
Yeah, absolutely. And they've certainly staked the claim to start in the next game, Reggie, because it is about those young, talented ones, you know, and they're the ones coming on making the difference, especially Leao. Now, they're never going to drop Ronaldo, but we've seen something similar, I felt, with Neymar at Brazil. Neymar was so poor in that first half.
Wasn't he?
Yeah, so poor. Now, I'm not his biggest fan anyway, but it's almost like he's hindering the team, because it's all about him and the self-indulgence of him and taking too much out of the ball. That when he went off and he brought on the young Martinelli, Rodrigo in particular was brilliant, Jesus, these young effervescent lads and the talent that they have. Brazil lit up the tournament in that second half. They were just brilliant, flooding forward. So now again, now I know he's injured, but I don't think the manager's ever going to drop Neymar either. So, but I think Brazil are a better team without him, and it'll be interesting to see, because I think he's injured for the next two group games. So it'll be interesting to see just how good they are without him.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know. Rafinha was the other one as well. It was just, you know, he had some great chances and he just kind of couldn't get his feet out from underneath him. And you could see the disappointment in his face every single time that he knew he should be doing better. But you know that ability is there and he probably will at some stage in the tournament light it all up as well. So, Neymar was just...
It's just so hard to watch, isn't it? So much now over the years, Reggie, and people are thinking, well, this is the major tournament for him to shine and be the player that everybody kind of suggests that he is. And he has the support cast around him. Something that I'd worry about with Argentina is that they're still very reliant on Messi. And when I looked at them the other day, they were very one-paced in midfield. Di Maria was very, very poor as well. In midfield, DePaul and Paredes, whereas you look at Neymar in Brazil, he has all stars around him, so it's not like he's carried the team on his own. He has brilliant players all over the place and he was still so poor. So as I say, I think they're better without him. You look at Rodrigo when he came on, he was electric. So he was Jesus as well, who's playing so well for Arsenal, can't get a game. Richarlison, now the confidence he'll have after scoring a couple of goals. Rafinha, as you mentioned, so there's so much attacking quality and players coming off the bench as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, the side that would be my dark horses, and you know, some people's favourites, there's no doubt about it, is France. I, you know, thought they were very convincing in that first win, and they're kind of just going about their business. They've got Denmark today, isn't it? They're playing Denmark, I think,
Denmark,
at 4 o'clock.
4 o'clock. Yeah,
that should be a cracking match as well. But I fancy France.
Well, you'd ward off the evidence of the first game, as you said, it were very, very impressive despite going a goal down. And what they have is the best player in the world, the Mbappe, and he's unbelievable, Reggie. He's just electric. And he delivers, like, all this talk, as we say, with Neymar question marks over him over the years, whereas Mbappe, you look at him in the last major tournament, here he is again, absolutely brilliant in the game against Australia. So even though they're missing two or three key players, they have a couple of the young lads that have come in. Tchouaméni was very, very good in centre midfield as well. And Giroud, your old pal Giroud, Reggie, the Arsenal days, he's still chipping in with the goals to be fair to him. He doesn't get the credit he probably deserves, but he's after equaling the all-time record of France now, 51 goals. So he's been a brilliant servant over the years. So even though they are missing the two or three, and obviously Benzema, they're still very, very dangerous because of the quality that they have. And that's a massive game for Denmark as well, because Denmark were very underwhelming in their first game, and people were suggesting they might be dark horses coming into the tournament. So a bit of pressure on Denmark in that game today, but I do like the look of France.
Okay, well, Group C now today is going to be cracking football. You've mentioned Saudi Arabia, and they've got Poland at 1 o'clock today, and then of course the other game in that match is Argentina taking on Mexico this evening at 7 o'clock. So this group, a large amount of this group could be decided on today's fixtures with those two cracking games, and Poland, Saudi Arabia. That's a really intriguing one.
Well, again, this is massive because Poland now are in a position where they probably have to win this because they only picked up a point, where Saudi Arabia have the 3 points. What I'm really interested to see, Reggie, I was so impressed with Saudi Arabia, almost blown away by the energy and the effort and the endeavour and how good they were, how disciplined and organised they were. Whereas the question I'm asking myself since then is, I can't wait to see them in the second match to see, can they replicate that and can they back it up? So that's going to be a huge game, obviously. I think that's at 1 o'clock. And then the big one tonight, Mexico and Argentina. And we don't really, like, there was so much hype coming into the tournament about Argentina and, of course, Messi, and all the romantics out there want to see him go on and win it. You don't want them going out at the group stage. So no. I hope they get a victory tonight and they get through to the knockout round.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that'll be it. And it's a great football. I have to say, Alan, watching it all, it's a little bit sickening that we're not involved. There are plenty of teams there that I think we're better than. You know, it's hard to take a little bit, isn't it?
Of course it is, Reggie. Yeah, like, we're so envious of them. And you look at Wales yesterday and we're thinking, if Wales can qualify, like, surely we can put ourselves in the mix. But unfortunately, where we're at the moment, we're not on that kind of level at the moment. And hopefully, though, in the next couple of years that we can get ourselves qualified. Because it is, when you only look at a major tournament, you can imagine what the country would be like here at the minute if we were involved in that. It'd be just unbelievable. But we're not, Reggie. Sadly, we're not.
It's hard to take. There's no doubt about it. And on that, what did you make of the Irish performance? I mean, again, it was a bit lacklustre.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was very disappointing. And the one against Norway, of course, and Norway are a decent side. It was just so flat. And we had a better second half. But then you're playing against Malta. You're kind of in a no-win situation where everybody just expects you to go out and win. And then it's not as easy as that, and they have plenty of men behind the ball, but it was, again, something similar, very flat, underwhelming. And you're talking there about us qualifying for major tournaments. We're well off that at the moment, Reggie, and we have serious work to do. But you're looking at Netherlands yesterday, and they were so, and I've covered them now in two games against Senegal and Ecuador, and Stephen Kenny has to be given some kind of hope when you look at those performances, because they were very, very poor, and we don't have anything to fear going in against Netherlands. Obviously, they have better players than us, and they're a better team, but I wouldn't be going in fearing them whatsoever on what I've watched in the last two games with them.
Okay, fair enough. Well, that gives us a little bit of hope. And I suppose Stephen Kenny be glad to just regroup is probably the best way to put it.
Yeah, and that was the thing. Like, you're coming near the end of the season. It was probably a strange one for them as well, because they had to meet up, and with the World Cup starting and there was an international window, so you played a couple of friendlies. Even though the players are looking at a break down of 4 or 5 weeks, so you'd wonder where their heads were at, even though obviously they're coming in to play for their country and you don't need motivation for that and it's an honour and all that kind of stuff. But it was probably a strange situation that they haven't faced into before, in that you know you're going off to meet for a couple of games, but then you're going to have 4 or 5 weeks of no football and a bit of a break. So you just wonder, I suppose, where their heads were at going into that. Now that we have had the break, the World Cup is on, as you said, regroup. He'd be in the campaign and kick off, I think, in March. And he'd be looking at the teams at the moment. You mentioned there Portugal were sticky enough against Ghana.
Yeah.
And obviously Netherlands as well. And France now, he'd be looking at them thinking, especially with Mbappe. But certainly it has to give us hope against the likes of Netherlands when you look at the performances they've put in, because Senegal are very, very poor.
It's time for NFL now. Delighted to be joined once again, returned from Lambeau Field, the one and only Stephen O'Brien. Good morning, Stephen. How are you?
I'm good, Reg. The prodigal son returns. Yeah, I had to take a hiatus, so I was stateside.
Absolutely. Right. Well deserved. I was just saying, we missed you here. There's no question about it, but I doubt you missed us too much. I know the team are struggling a little bit, but no doubt you guys had a good time over there.
It's weird you said, how did you know, Reg? How did you know? Yeah, look, it's a great place to be. There's an awful lot to it. And there's sort of, when you look at it as well, there's not a lot to do in Green Bay, but it's football, football, football. Everyone's crazy about it. You know, at christenings, the priest is wearing Packers gear. I mean, you know, funerals is the same as the Packers cup. I mean, it's crazy over there.
What were you doing over there? Match. Funerals, christenings, and did you go to a wedding as well? Did you not go for any
went
football?
Went to a wedding as well, yeah. Went to a wedding, a few confirmations. That's what we go over for, you know, the events. No, do you know what? There was two games this time around, so right. Great. Usually we go over for one game. It was two, the way that the schedule fell. And before the season, Reg, we looked at these games, and the Packers were winning 13 games every season, and we looked at it, and they were playing the Cowboys. And Mike McCarthy used to be the coach of the Packers. He went to the Cowboys, and we're like, oh, revenge game, this is going to be tasty. And then we looked at the Titans game and we thought, oh, there's another really good team, which they are, coming into Lambeau Field, you know, we could lay waste to them. But it turns out the bad team is us. So we were the bad team. So that was a bit annoying. So before the season it was great, but it was a Sunday game and it was a Thursday game. And again, not to give a shameless plug, but I know an awful lot of people are very interested, and one of the things that I promised to do more for myself than anybody else and on the podcast was to get loads of video footage and audio and stuff of going over this time. Because usually, Reg, we kind of, you know, we land Friday, it's college game Saturday, NFL game, the Packers game in Lambeau on Sunday, and we fly back Monday, and it's a whirlwind. You know, you don't know from your head, you're from your backside, and before you know it, you're back in Ireland. Because this time I had a couple of days in between, so I've put up a load of YouTube videos kind of showing what Lambeau looks like at night time, what the Champions Tour is all about, and I have another one coming to sort of show you what game day is like. Brilliant. At Lambeau, and you can go to youtube.com/UK Packers. Again, not a plug, but if you're interested, it's exactly what we do.
Plug away. I'll definitely be having a look at those. We want to see what that's all about, because as I said, a lot of people listening probably, you know, the NFL is very popular here, and some people might even tune out at this section if they don't understand it too well. But if you get a feel for what it's all about, and I've been to a few games back in the old LA Raiders days, going back a few years now, in the Rose Bowl in LA, and what an incredible experience it is to actually go to the game. You get caught up in the whole hype of it all and the experience of it all. It's very American, but it's a great experience. So it's well worth going and checking out those YouTube videos. So I'm sure plenty of our listeners will. So plug away. What's been happening in the game, though, since we last spoke to you? A little bit of controversy in New York with the quarterback?
Yeah, it's a weird one, isn't it? I mean, this came out during the week, and it's amazing to see this guy's interview before and after. And who are we talking about? It is quarterback Zach Wilson. This guy was the number 2 overall pick in 2021. The New York Jets, he plays for the New York Jets. And why he's in the news is, Reg, is that they're on the cusp of the playoffs. Again, nothing sort of solidified yet. You know, but they're right there in the mix. It's just, it's a shame that they're actually in a division that's really, really tough because they're playing really well. But the quarterback isn't. And, you know, you look at it and you're sort of, if you look at the record, you're like, oh God, they're doing great and their defense is unbelievable. But they had an absolutely shocking game against the Patriots. And look, there's no shame in having a shocking game against the Patriots. In fact, the games that they've lost this season have been both against the Patriots. You know, so it's been tough on them. But they only scored 3 points. And they said to this quarterback, Zach Wilson, who's a young fella who's learning, they said to him, you know, do you think it's, you know, your fault as an offense? You should have done more to help out your defense. And he said, no. And Reg, when you score 3 points, you know, it's your fault. You know, it's the offense's fault. I know it's a team game and all that kind of stuff. But people saw that. It's amazing, Reg, right? Is that an awful lot of these storylines that come out, you look at them and go, look, there's an awful lot more to the story than that. But for Zach Wilson to go from starting quarterback, so he's not even togged out for this game on Sunday. He's not even on the roster. He's, and you can say he's benched, but he's worse than that. He's not even on the game day 53. So it's shocking that this fall from grace. Now, he hasn't been playing well this season, but what it comes down to, Reg, is that one singular word, no. You know, it showed his arrogance. It showed that he hadn't learned. And the media went crazy, of course, as the media does. And Robert Saleh, who's a fantastic head coach, who was always expected to do well with the Jets, but people sort of got taken by surprise by the Jets that they're doing so well so quickly, is that when you look at Zach Wilson, you look at his arrogance, you look at his, you know, youth, and Robert Saleh made the decision, said, you know what, if you're going to say it's not your fault and you're not going to take accountability in the media and all that kind of stuff, see ya. And he's got this guy in called Mike White, whose stats, Reg, as well, are not great. Now, he's backed up by Joe Flacco, who's a Super Bowl winner. But as you say, I mean, talk about controversy in New York. Finally, the Jets are doing well. And then they take the starting quarterback from one interview and bench him. Now, obviously, there's an awful lot more to it. His performances are pretty bad. He's right down the very bottom in quarterback performance. But it just shows, Reg, doesn't it, that you can have the most important position on the field. Everyone will tell you, including the Packers, because Aaron Rodgers has an injured thumb and their team is underperforming and people are pointing at him. You look at Zach Wilson and they're still winning. And it's like when Peyton Manning won the Super Bowl with the Broncos that time, in spite of his poor play. Sometimes defense does win championships, and that's what's happening. So they've decided to make the move and bench their starting quarterback. Crazy.
Interesting. I'd say there's a little bit more than that going on behind the scenes, but we'll have to wait and see. Okay, we're reached week 12, should I say. I'm a bit tongue-tied this morning after being up all night watching the toy show. But it's week 12 of 17-game season. So what's the picture that's taken shape? And like, it's a little bit stranger than you might have thought at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, it is weird. And can I just say, the toy show on at 9:30 till midnight, it's not aimed at kids. Yeah. My two kids fell asleep.
They're all falling asleep, yeah.
It's ridiculous, you know what I mean? I think it's actually aimed at us parents. But anyway, look, it is a weird season. It's very odd because in some divisions, Reg, you'll have teams that are just doing outstanding. Like, we just spoke about the Jets. You look at the AFC East, the Bills 8 wins, Dolphins 7 wins, the Jets 6 wins and doing great. They're third in the division. And then the Patriots are on the same record, kind of, at 6-5. You know, you look at the AFC North, the Ravens are flying high, the Bengals as well. All the other teams are terrible. You look at the Titans division, they're top at 7. The Colts, Jags, Texans, awful. You know, and so that's what's happened this season, is that you look at some of these teams, more so the AFC are doing really well. The NFC is a bit of a dumpster fire. And this will just show you that when I talk about the Akin on any given Sunday, it's absolutely true, because not only is it a game, you know, every Sunday anything can happen, but any season anything can happen. So if you look at the playoffs, and it's very early to be doing it, I know, but if you look at the playoff picture, you see the usual sort of offenders there. The Chiefs are in number one in the AFC. You have the Bills right behind them, the Titans, the Ravens, all names that we know and love. Coming behind them are Dolphins, Bengals, and Jets. The Jets being the surprise there, and especially if we don't know what's going to happen when they bench their quarterback. And then the NFC, the Eagles, a massive surprise, Reds. No one expected them to be at 9-1, but they are. The Vikings, always second fiddle to the Packers, the NFC North. They're second in all of the NFC. The Niners have made a comeback. The Bucs are fourth in the playoff picture, Reg, and they're 5-5. They're really struggling this season, but their division is terrible in the NFC South. So if you just top your division, you get into the playoffs, and that's how it works. So look, it's a really weird year, not to mention that they've blown open the playoffs now the last couple of years with extra teams. So, you know, you get some kind of really poor teams in that just get, kind of get waxed. But then teams go on a hot streak. So look, you know, it's really exciting from here on out because the teams are going to keep leapfrogging each other. And I'm sure at the end of every segment now, every week, we're going to be talking how one team has fell off, another team has sort of dived in.
Yeah.
It's all to play for.
Okay, well, I'm nearly out of time. So very quickly, just run me through your ACCA, if you wouldn't mind.
Yep, the ACCA's a nightmare this season, Reg. we've got just over 6-1 odds. Save your money, spend it on Christmas presents. But if you're not and you're that way inclined, look, the Tampa Bay Bucs have been struggling. They've got a small spread against the Cleveland Browns, who've been doing worse. That's -3.5. The Washington Commanders, another one of those teams that really just shocked everybody this year. They're -4 against the Falcons, who haven't shocked anybody. And then the LA Chargers are -3 against the Arizona Cardinals. So a tenner down, you get 70 back.
Thank you, Reggie. Yeah, really busy schedule for our county champions. Continued apace last weekend, as indeed it does this one as well, with no fewer than 4 sets of them stepping up their campaign on the road to ultimate glory. Last Saturday, Kilmacud Crokes booked their place in the second consecutive Leinster Senior Club Championship final. Robbie Brennan's side having little trouble seeing off the challenge of Leash champions Port Arlington at Croke Park in their semi-final meeting. 11 points was the winning margin, 112-4 at the end of the hour. The goal early on from Andrew McGowan. So the back-to-back county and defending provincial champions will be back at Croke Park next Sunday for the final against Westmead outfit the Downs. Well, after the game at headquarters last Saturday evening, I spoke to Croke's boss, Robbie Brennan. He began by expressing the viewpoint that the Leash side really hadn't done themselves justice on the night.
I don't think they played to their potential. I don't necessarily think it was anything we did anything differently. We were probably a little bit more prepared for them and having known them from last year, but I don't think they hit their straps at all, to be honest with you, and that's probably the difference in the scoreline, but I wouldn't think it reflects their ability as a positive for us, yeah.
Once you got the goal, you just kicked on really after that then, Rob?
Yeah, I think so. I think it was important because we'd missed a free and then it was a bit of a settler. I think Andy got a chance last year up in the Hill 16 end of similar kind of run and he missed it, so delighted he got this one, yeah.
But the message in at halftime has got to be keep the tempo up, keep going, don't let your guard down, don't let them back into the game, and you have to be very happy with the way the second half went overall as well.
Yeah, I think so, because we were down that black card for that first 8 minutes of the second half, so we were trying to maybe just keep that level. I think we might have actually won a 2-0 possibly in that period, so that was a big plus for us. And then we said if we could do that, we'd try and push on from there. So we got sloppy though with, I don't know, maybe 15 minutes to go. We started forcing things a little bit and kicking ball away. So still huge amount of positives in that.
So you had 3 pre-match changes, Robbie. The big screen told us it was 1-15 as selected. Oh. So what was the reasoning or thinking behind those changes?
Well, Conor Casey has a bit of a shoulder injury, and then the others were just tactical. The other couple of tactical changes. So Shane was hit and miss whether he's going to start or not. So. We were keeping that option open as well, so hence a couple of changes. But luckily he was able to start, thankfully, anyway, at that stage. You know.
And when you regrouped after the disappointment of your last visit here, which we won't mention anymore, the intention was obviously initially to win Dublin back-to-back, which you did, and now you're back in the Leinster final again. So it's falling into place rather nicely at the moment, although the Downs will be some tough opposition in a couple of weeks' time, Rob.
Yeah, they will. No, Dublin was obviously the target and go back-to-back there. It doesn't happen too often, obviously, so that was our initial target was try and stay up in the league, to be honest with you, when we came out of here after Kilcoo. So thankfully we did that, and then we just kind of built slowly from there on in, and plenty of tests in Dublin that sets you up nicely for a Leinster campaign. But yeah, I've seen the Downs a lot. We played them a couple of years in a challenge match when John O'Mahony had them. They're a very good side, so I'd know their manager Larwell from his time in Kells, and he sets teams up really well, and you can see from the bit I saw it there they're a good side, a bit off today, more so than us being brilliant, you know.
And Croke Park has tried something different this year. I mean, normally this time you'd be going to TG, Cusack Park or Port Leash or somewhere else to play a provincial semi-final. You're playing it at Croke Park and the final will be here in a couple of weeks' time. Please God, your hurlers might be here with you as well. But the overall thoughts on a move like that?
I think it's brilliant. I think for anyone who's playing, it's a grand for us in here in the bit of heat and the bit of warm, but I think for the players themselves, the opportunity just to stand out there, it's amazing. Amazing experience just to be on the pitch. So obviously it's more normal for some than others, but the guys who don't get to get out there for the county, suddenly to be in your club jersey out there, it's a fantastic feeling. And for it not to have to just be an All-Ireland final, I think is a great opportunity. So one we're looking forward to.
Thanks indeed there to Robbie Brennan, and well done to Crokes on a great victory last Saturday. To Camogie now, and this morning we say congratulations to our senior Camogie champion St Vincent's. who last Sunday added the Leinster title to their Dublin crown thanks to a solitary points success over Owlert the Balla down in Carlow. 1-9 to 11 points was the final result. The goal in the first half from Niamh Heatherton, which helped earn an All-Ireland semi-final ticket in 2 weeks' time. Fantastic stuff there from the Merino ladies, and we wish them every success in that big semi-final in a fortnight's time. So then to this weekend and several games to keep an eye on. Firstly, Kilmacud Croke's hurlers tomorrow at Croke Park look to emulate their football counterparts in securing a Leinster final place. St Mullins of Carlow stand in their way of achieving that goal from 3:15 in the second game of the afternoon's double header. The first one is the clash of defending champions Ballyhale Shamrocks and Naas of Kildare. Crokes have already had an outing in the provincial championship this year. They beat Laois Kingpins Clochballacolla a couple of weeks ago at Parnell Park. And we all here at Dublin's Talking Sport wish the Stillorgan men chasing what would be an historic win in that one every success, and please God they can be back at Croke Park alongside their footballers next Sunday. Staying with the purple and gold, their ladies footballers are an hour away from a place in the All-Ireland Club Final. The first time County and Leinster champions are on the road to face Dunamoyne of Monaghan tomorrow afternoon in the All-Ireland semi-final in a game scheduled to get underway up there at 1:30. And as indeed with the hurlers, we wish the purple and gold every success in their attempt to get to Croke Park in 2 weeks' time. Finally, with ladies football, our junior champions O'Dwyer's are on the road tomorrow as well. The Balbriggan crew travel west to Galway for an All-Ireland Last Four clash with Salthill Knocknacarra, and 1:30 is also the throw-in time for that one. Two more games finally to tell you about this week. The Under-21A Football Championship final is down for decision this afternoon at Parnell Park. It's an all-Southside affair. Ballinteer St John's and Ballyboden St Enda's meeting there from 2 o'clock. While Naive Barrogues hurlers have a Leinster Intermediate Club Championship date with Bray Emmett's down in Ockham. And that one, like so many other games this weekend, is throwing in at 1:30.
Thanks for listening to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 from myself, Ken, and Reggie. Have a good weekend.